Full Service Radio is proudly supported and hosted by Simplecast, the easiest way for a podcast creator to publish and distribute audio on the internet. For more information, visit simplecast.com.
Tune into Full Service Radio.
Full Service Radio.
Full Service.
Full Service. Full Service.
Full Service Radio.
Yeah. New vibes.
Thank you, Jeff.
What show is this? Is this even Shift Drink?
This is Shift Drink Theater 3000.
New intro music by yes. Jeffrey Lamoureux.
Yeah, hopefully let us know if you like it. We're going to work with this for a while. Hey, friends, welcome to Shift Drink on Full Service Radio, broadcasting live from the Line Hotel in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C., our nation's capital. I'm Eddie Kim, proud DCist. Luke Perry enthusiast.
Oh, wow.
All right. I brought it up a little bit too soon. We just learned about it just now.
Luke Perry.
Luke Perry R.I.P. passed away at 52. Buffy Scooby-Doo member.
That's a hard one to follow. I'm Matthew Ramsey, old burger soul, ice cream caretaker, and gluttonous Maximus. Every week we share a Shift Drink and swap war stories from behind the line with chefs, bartenders, bakers, brewers, and basically anybody who touches this all-encompassing industry. This week, we are joined by the one and only Bill Jensen, co-owner and beverage laureate of Tailed Goat, and a recent semifinalist for James Beard Award for Outstanding Wine Program. I should also mention you're my boss.
Yeah, I feel like that is an important thing to mention. Just
I could go on. I could go on a lot. There's a lot more I could say.
Someone's going to tell me what you are going to say.
Well, yeah, your journalistic integrity is at stake here.
I'm going to be doing all the ass kissing, and Eddie's going to be asking the hard questions today.
You have a little something on your nose right now.
Yeah.
It seems to be of a brown color.
It's also safe to say that Jill Tyler is listening right now. She's one of our biggest listeners. So
she's listening to the live show.
So no pressure.
Jill Tyler has also been on the podcast, so I have big shoes to fill.
Now, Bill, while you're on the air, have you actually listened to that episode?
I have. I have. I want noted that I have. I famously dragged my feet about listening to said episode, and Jill appropriately called me on that.
Right on.
But I have listened to that amazing work.
Well, welcome. It's awesome to have you.
I'm thrilled to be on. Thank you so much for having me, guys.
Yeah, this is it's been really fun. This is Shift Drink. So you asked for this surprised me because I didn't know we had this in common. But what are we drinking?
I'm drinking a Tecate Tall Boy. The other gentlemen are drinking 12-ounce cans.
Oh, come on,
I'm sorry. Tall Boy is the preferred.
They only had one tall boy at the store, and so Eddie and I are slumming it.
The
with
the single lonely tall boy at the store, probably the saddest image I can think of.
But this is Bill. This is hospitality.
I hugely appreciate it. Thank you, gentlemen.
No, but why Tecate?
Because it's uncomplicated and refreshing, and the Mexicans have a gift with cheap beer, and at the end of a night of drinking, you know, more kind of esoteric, interesting things. I find more often than not, I want to just kick back with, you know, something, you know, simple and easy.
Is this, I mean, there is such thing as palate fatigue, and so this helps alleviate it?
I don't know if it helps alleviate it. It's just...
what are the symptoms of palate fatigue?
Yeah, and I don't know if I'm thinking in terms of fatigue at that point. I'm just, you know...
But it's crushable.
Yeah, exactly. It's kind of like it's like the liquid denouement, you know? It's just like, you know, settling things down at the end of... At the end of the night. And fascinatingly enough, like,
I think we all understood that denouement.
Denouement, wow.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah, just taking it up a notch for you.
Tecate, the denouement of the night.
Someone suggest that to the Tecate people as a potential slogan. like, highbrow, Greek Greek tragedy references when it comes to Mexican beer marketing.
And you have this on the tail up menu?
No, we don't. No. I believe strongly that every beverage list needs good cheap beer, but ours is Presidente out of the Dominican, and that is in honor of my partner Jill's roots in the U.S. Virgin Islands. And in the Virgin Islands, there are kind of two camps. You either drink Presidente, or there are a bunch of people that drink Heineken. Those are the two camps. There's kind of like a it is kind of like a two-party system. There is like a Ross Perot that is Carib, which I actually really
like. I really like Carib.
It's very good. But I told, it's funny, I told Jill's sister that I was thinking about featuring Carib, and she looked at me like I was voting for Perot. It was like, go ahead, throw your vote away. And Nikki, Jill's sister, is very strongly in the Presidente camp, as is Jill. And so, you know, I cast my lot with the Presidente drinkers, which incidentally is delicious, absolutely delicious cheap beer too. I don't think it's Tecate Tallboy delicious, but it is very delicious.
Yeah, I think it's in that same category. But also, like, where is Ross Perot these days? You don't really hear much about that guy anymore.
I think he's 6 feet under at this point.
Is he?
I don't know. So quick Google search, somebody.
Oh, this is such a sad episode already. Oh, no.
First Luke Perry?
Yeah, no, not Ross Perot.
Well, I decided to bring a little extra something into the mix. I procured this... I don't know if you're familiar with this. It's called Hampton Waters.
Holy hell. Wow. I've actually not had this. I'm thrilled. I'm so thrilled.
I thought you would be.
This is, well, I don't want to spoil it. So this is one John Bon Jovi's rosé. And, you know, it is just an incredible package. I have not tracked this down as of yet, but I am thrilled to try it live on air.
Yeah.
For the first time.
So this is from Languedoc.
Languedoc?
Languedoc, despite
south of France, it says at the bottom, the even though it says Hampton Waters.
Apparently Bon Jovi's son named the wine itself, and he John Bon Jovi describes it as if he were collaborating with another musician. He said his son knows wine the way he knows music.
So creative differences in a lot of...
Well, it's fascinating, though, because I associate John Bon with Jersey.
Right.
But I guess Jersey water doesn't sound...
Jersey water doesn't have quite the same...
No. But I like it. That John Bon, you know, has unabashedly embraced the Hamptons as, you know, the source of his wine of choice.
Yeah. All right. So, Bill, walk us through this. What are you smelling here? What are we getting about this one?
All right. So when I instruct the staff on tasting wines, you know, first thing... You judge by sight. This is beautiful. The Hampton Water is a nice kind of pale salmon color in the glass. And warning for viewers, this is impossible not to sound like a total doucher in evaluating wine, especially live. But Matthew, to his credit, bought nice stemware to the mix as well.
The fanciest glassware we've used so far.
Yeah, I'll take all the credit for it, not brothers and sisters.
we're getting like a strong wet rock thing, which is... one of those wine descriptors that doesn't really carry any weight. Kind of a way of filling dead air, I guess, would be the...
Harkens to one's childhood. You know?
Yeah, exactly. And I don't know if John Bon has strong wet rock associations himself, but it's kind of lightly floral and citric. You know, it smells like Languedoc Rosé.
Yeah. Ooh. It's good, and then it kind of has like a... I'm getting like a rusty finish.
I think like up front, I kind of dig it. But then on the back end, there's just a little bit of this like artificial, like aspirin-y kind of thing happening. That said, I would slam it. I would slam the hell out of it. And I think it should be duly noted that John Bon Jovi, who I've had the great pleasure of serving in the course of my professional career, is a huge fan of the white wine spritzer.
Wait, you've served John Bon Jovi?
I have served John Bon Jovi, and I'm proud to say that his hair in person is as resplendent as it is, on television. He came into the restaurant I formerly worked at and asked for all the ingredients of a wine spritzer without ordering the spritzer itself. And so basically, got a glass of white wine.
So he was doing market research.
Yeah, I guess so. This is well before the launch of his Hampton Water brand.
Yeah.
But proceeded to build his own wine spritzer tableside and subsequently served in wine spritzer tableside. And he deserves credit as a real innovator on the wine.
A pioneer.
And an eye-opener for me on the spritzer front. Because they are pretty damn delicious.
You turn the degrees up 50 more degrees.
Absolutely.
And
personally, like, I'm not, you know, not a huge dude. I'm not a great day drinker. And it's nice to have something that is, you know, a little diluted, you know, that you can drink steadily.
Yeah.
If you're, you know, poolside or at your Hamptons Villa, you know, and, you know, won't get you totally turned, just pleasantly buzzed.
All right. Well, as we kind of sip on this, let's cut to just a kind of quick week in review.
Let us talk about the news.
What's going on?
What's going on?
So big news. I mean, all right. Well, Luke Perry. We'll just take a moment for Luke.
Luke Perry.
We literally just found this out moments ago, so we're obviously devastated.
I'm going to say my favorite role of his was in Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Yeah.
The original movie.
Yeah. That soundtrack was amazing.
Yes.
Big news today, Carly Steiner.
Carly Steiner, former guest here.
Yeah, former guest and our new partner.
She's completing her takeover of Petworth.
Of Petworth.
Yeah.
The neighborhood
she's
of Petworth,
the new queen
up your street.
Of Petworth.
So she's teaming up with Anna Brandlais of Taqueria del Barrio.
Yeah.
It was another restaurant on Upshur Street in Petworth, and they're opening up a cocktail bar.
Neighbors are collaborating, and yeah, they're going to do jump to new that old Hank's cocktail space.
We can expect to see what, a lot of sherry, a lot of sherry cocktails, a lot of
looks like a Latin-ish wine program, maybe.
Right.
Yeah, and she Carly has a hand in Shoefly Imports as well, so mm-hmm. she brings in some South American spirits and wines. So it's kind of a natural extension of her brand, if you will. But she's an all-around badass, and she, you know, has her roots with the Jose's cocktail empire.
Yeah.
So
it'll
be really exciting to see what she does with a full bar.
And I'm guessing something mezcal. She loves mezcal.
Bill, would you fall in the huge-ass beer category or the giant-ass beer category?
This is huge ass or giant ass?
Yeah, this relates to one of our news items.
Wow, this sounds like this sounds like a weird question. It's like George W. Bush, great president or greatest president? Oh. I would say neither. I'm currently drinking a Tecate Tallboy, so that should tell you where my heart lies.
Sure.
Yeah.
Well, huge ass beer is actually trademarked. The name is trademarked in New Orleans, and the owner of it is suing the other bars around him for using giant ass beer. And where a lot of people are hoping this epic law fight goes all the way up to the Supreme Court.
Oh,
huge
God.
Ass beer versus giant ass beer.
That's so NOLA.
It's important. It's important. The grenades. I remember the grenades. There was a law fight over that because people were copying the grenades.
Oh, understood.
Cocktails.
Words matter. Mm. Well, we mentioned, Bill, your most recent nomination here with James Beard, but DC had a fucking great week.
We did pretty solid.
Can you drop F-bombs on there? Is that kosher?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yes.
Okay. Well, I won't restrain myself anymore.
No, let the party begin.
So several best new restaurant nominations, Ellie in Mount Pleasant and Spoken English, literally a stone's throw away from here. Something I found very awesome, outstanding service in a restaurant. We have Marcel's, which is very excellent service. And then kind of on the opposite side of the spectrum, we have Peking Gourmet Inn for their stellar service.
Which is amazing. But I will say that they have, so for those of you that haven't been to Peking Gourmet Inn yet, first go. It is kind
of I have not been, for the record.
Oh, dear God.
I'm putting that out there on the
hot duck.
I feel somewhat responsible anytime one of my employees tells me they have not been there. At any rate, it is the gold standard for Peking duck, pretty much nationally, if not internationally.
Wow.
And they have the most amazing tableside carving. And literally, these folks that like look like they were born to carve these ducks, and not only that they've been doing it for decades upon decades, and their service staff is
it's kind amazing. It's a nice twist for the James Beard Awards now that they're recognizing, I mean, they started recognizing other restaurants for their American Heritage Awards.
They've been doing that for a while.
Yeah.
But in terms of you know, that always felt like a, you know, you have no hope in hell of being actually nominated, so we're going to throw you a bone kind of thing. So it is right. Nice to, you know, see some OGs and different styles of service acknowledged, because Marcel's, they do an amazing job, but it is, you know, very much in the vein of traditional white tablecloth. And to see like an ethnic restaurant, yeah. you know, unabashedly ethnic restaurant get that kind of recognition is really cool.
Ellie, best new restaurant. Spoken English, best new restaurant. Outstanding restaurant, Comey. And then, of course, a long list of Mid-Atlantic chefs.
So this is the semi-finalist list. So it's the long list. And about a couple of weeks, we should have the finalist list.
And it is a long, long list. Mm-hmm. So it's not like, it will be whittled down right. by what, you know, several times. Like,
right.
Yeah.
But everyone deserves to be on the list, and
no, it's really exciting.
Great names.
Tom Kunnan, John Siebert, Taleb Goat, Kevin Tian, Himitsu, a lot of them. Now I was reading the requirements, and it said a restaurant that's been open for 5 years.
So they are notoriously kind of fickle about how they interpret. that, you know.
Yeah, because literally every description is like. Outstanding wine program, a restaurant that's been around for 5 years. Outstanding chef. You know, chef is like nebulous. That has like, I think the chef has to have been a chef for 5 years.
Yeah, that's true. John certainly falls in that category. Yeah. We certainly have not been open 5 years yet, so I don't want
to. Well, we don't need to let that out.
I don't want to go back to them saying,
well, actually.
but I suspect this is a response to how the restaurant industry is changing. The need to be more nimble. 5 years is now a long time in the restaurant industry.
It's crazy, yeah. I mean, like I always say that restaurant years are kind of like dog years. So, you know, the half-life on Restaurant Trends is blessedly short. And, and I think it's, you know, important for them to acknowledge as much.
Yeah, absolutely.
I kind of want to bring up a couple of things that came close to my heart. I think Korean food has been in the news in the past month or past few weeks. Michelle Zoner, the lead of Japanese Breakfast, a really great band coming out of Philly. She wrote an article last year called Crying in H Mart about her coming to terms with the death of her mother and coming to terms with her half Korean heritage. She's actually going to write a book. So
We talked about this article when it came out, because it was...
What is it called, Eddie?
Crying in H Mart.
Oh, wow.
So if anyone hasn't been to H Mart...
Is she from Annandale or...
I don't think so. I think she's from Philly.
Okay.
But she's half Korean. She knows H Mart very well. And she remembers the articles about her coming to terms with the death of her mother through the experiences of cooking.
Wow.
Which she's now re-embraced.
Really powerful article, though. Definitely check it out. Mm-hmm. And now it's going to be expanded into book form.
Into a book, a memoir. Bon Appetit has a cover story this month of Korean food. And a lot of the dishes were created by Soo-hee Kim, who is the lead chef and partner of Insa in Brooklyn. I'm a big fan of hers. There's a really great interview of her on Bon Appetit's podcast. And then, nothing to do with food, Sandra Oh got the Emmy win for Killing Eve.
Which is an amazing show.
Huge fan of Sandra Oh.
I'm a big fan of Sandra Oh's hair.
Yes. Yes. Always full.
Yeah. It's amazing.
I hope to achieve that.
Actually,
level
yeah, Eddie, you have very similar. I feel like I've only seen your hair down twice, but.
I've tamed it.
Both times they've been, yeah. Mm-hmm. Very, it's.
It's amazing.
It's noble.
Yeah,
noble.
I mean, you have a essentially bald gentleman, and then another gentleman with kind of thinning blonde hair talking to Eddie with long lustrous black locks that will never thin.
It's no stretch of imagination that I suffer from hair envy.
I will make note that even though I have long hair on my head, I do not have. I can't really grow a beard, so I've never had a soul patch. Matthew, have you had a soul patch?
I'm rocking one right now.
I get the best of both worlds. So thinning blonde hair, and I can't really grow a beard either. My mom said it was like a Pennsylvania Dutch thing, but yeah, I know.
I just wanted to bring that up because Matthew and I have a very shared love of Grey's Anatomy.
Yeah, which is now the longest running medical show.
Oh, dear God.
Medical drama in prime time, to be specific. 16 seasons.
Well, it's been a nice show, gentlemen. I'll be leaving.
And now it's a Grey's Anatomy podcast.
Yeah, as we drink our Hampton Waters here. All right, well, let's get back to Bill here. Yes. Bill, we have a little game.
Strong news roundup, though, gentlemen. Strong news roundup. And just like, incidentally, I will say, it is it's very exciting to see DC get its due.
Yeah.
Especially, I mean, the Beard Awards, they have their merits. And it is really exciting to see a national audience take note of what is happening here at a bunch of different levels, both on the ethnic food side, you know, on the small restaurant side, to see a place like Comey nominated for a national award for best restaurant. And it's really,
and it's amazing, awesome. Too, just like looking back, say 6 or 7 years ago, when DC was kind of just starting to percolate in the food world, and to see how much progress and kind of how we're at this really amazing forefront right now.
Yeah, and hopefully now it feels like more of a truism as opposed to how cute DC has food too.
Exactly.
We are adorable.
Now, Bill, I didn't double check with you, but I asked you to do a two truths, one lie.
I was prepared, sir. Okay. I was prepared, and I listened to the aforementioned episode featuring one Jill Tyler and Clemenzine Suka, and as well as a few other episodes. So I'm fully prepared.
All right. Yeah. So, without further ado, two truths, one lie.
Two truths, one lie.
All right, Bill. You know the game. Lie to me.
I had the pleasure of waiting on Ludacris, and when I checked in on his table, asked him about his meal, he said, "Shit's gross. Send it back." That's number one.
Ludacris got dad jokes.
Number two, my prized kind of item in my closet is a Canadian tuxedo.
Oh, now you're speaking my language.
Number three, my grandfather was a winemaker.
Ah. Oh, wow. I don't know. I've met your family.
I've heard stories about Ludacris dining out.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mentioned it before about the egg rolls.
That's right. Yeah.
So he is vocal about
his
love or
Ludacris hatred of food. Ludacris is true. Canadian tuxedo.
Or maybe you just did research and now you're just trying to fuck with us.
This is, yeah. There's,
oh, you're a dick.
Yeah. Justin Timberlake, Canadian tuxedo.
Canadian tuxedo. I can see you wearing a Canadian tuxedo.
I've never seen him wear a Canadian tuxedo.
You think you just throw a little,
I think,
little boomerang in and or a little twist in?
Yeah.
He's a wine professional that does not have wine roots.
Yeah.
Okay. Your grandfather was not a winemaker.
My grandfather possessed no vineyards, but he made wine out of Welch's grape juice.
Oh, man.
My mother still talks about to this day. Not affectionately.
This is before Instapot.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I just like... my grandfather and my grandparents, you know, they grew up in, you know... I feel like they came out of age in the Depression era, so, like, you made your own shit. You know, you made do, and... they actually lived briefly in Oklahoma, and this is post-prohibition, but there was still prohibition in the state of Oklahoma.
Okay.
And so he was an avid home brewer in Oklahoma. And the way he talks about it, like, you would go to the grocery store, even though there was, you know, statewide prohibition, and they would have, like, malt, you know, like,
right,
all the ingredients for a beer. And then, you know...
Kind of like going to a hydroponic shop.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. So it's like, disclaimer, do not grow your own.
Yeah.
But if you want to, you know... That kind of thing. He would make his own wine out of Welch's. I also purchased a 3-piece Canadian tuxedo in Franklin, West Virginia for $6, which remains my pride and joy.
When do you break this thing out? Is this
a special occasion? I think I wore it my last... Actually, I wore it to my last... last time I wore it was last shift at my former job before Tail Up Goat opened to Comey. I trotted it out.
Wow.
Yeah, which was also
that's a powerful move.
Yeah, which is also on Halloween. I was very excited that it still fit into it because it was really well tailored, and I bought it when I was like 22 or something. So, Lastly, the Luda never happened. I've had
Luda never happened. Okay,
Luda never happened. I've waited some waited on some really amazing people, but that happened to a friend of a friend, and it's an amazing story. You know, Luda, the server came over, and Luda said, "Shit's gross. Send it back."
Oh God.
But that never happened to me.
So they were wrong.
Yeah,
they were incorrect.
They were wrong.
Yeah, long story short.
Please cue it. Thank you. What? Bill really wanted a fart noise on the show.
Yeah. Maybe we'll work on that for next time.
Yes.
One sound effect at a time. We just got a new song title or song theme. So, I think I asked Jill the same question. I mean, at TaleUp, you're always talking to everybody that comes in. It doesn't matter if they're a food critic like Tom Sietsma or if they're a celebrity. Do you ever get nervous? Going into the city, have you gotten starstruck?
Absolutely. We've been fortunate to have people I hugely respect from many different walks of life come in, and you totally get nervous. I think on the food critic side of ledger, I'm fortunate enough that I feel like I've done this enough that they're more often not people that you recognize and have an existing relationship with. And at that point, you just try to address them as regulars, more than, critics. And
that's probably what they're looking for these days.
It's probably the actual
hopefully.
Experience.
Yeah, totally. You can only do so much of that, too. Like, the Michelin thing is actually, fully anonymous. And, there are so many different people coming through, and there's so many different publications that it'd be impossible to recognize everybody, no matter how good you are at that game. So, it just speaks to the idea of engaging everyone that comes through your doors. But yeah, totally. I have gotten starstruck. The former POTUS and FLOTUS have been in and
well, that might speak extra to a place like Peking Gourmet Inn, which I'm assuming that they might not care about the publications as some of us.
But they get they got mad love from the Bush family. Like the Bushes love them.
Oh, really?
Peking Gourmet Inn. Oh, totally. Yeah, they had so Peking Gourmet Inn has the most amazing kind of Washington wall of fame, they take it very seriously. It's almost like wallpapered with photographs of distinguished locals down to the further away you get from the door, the less significant it is. So by the time you end up in the second and third dining room, it's Brigadier General standing with the owner with a goofy smile as opposed to...
Right, your Z-list.
Yeah, exactly. And then there's an exalted spot for, I think, the Princess of Thailand or something like that. Anyway.
A permanently reserved spot?
Well, she has a special frame, I think. It's pretty amazing. I don't know. I don't know where I was going with that tangent.
I mean, it's one of those old school DC's places.
Oh, totally.
That it's one of the little quirks of here that, you might have a walk of fame or over in LA, but here we have a politician's wall of
fame.
Well,
it's like that famous for DC thing.
Yes.
It's like the old Hollywood for ugly people.
I'll tell you, I've eaten sushi next to Newt Gingrich. That was an interesting experience.
It's fascinating. So I would come home working at Comey and tell my wife, oh, X or Y person came in, and be really excited about it. And one time, Timothy Geithner, the former Secretary of the Treasury under Obama, came in, and I was really excited because he came in a few times, and he liked wine and would let me recommend stuff to him. And I told my wife, and she was like, who the hell is that? and then I think I told her offhandedly that we were making space so that John Bond could come in, and she was just obviously that was a big deal. So
we're all a little wonkish here. I mean, is there
fast forward and now we're drinking Hampton Waters.
Matthew, who would you like to eat dinner next to?
Living or
no? Living, but like a DC figure.
Oh, DC figure. I'm still waiting for the AOC appearance.
Oh yeah,
that's gonna happen.
Yeah, that would be amazing. I don't know what her food tastes are like though.
I mean, she's worked in the industry.
She has. That's a very good point.
She knows her cocktails, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah. She references it in her tweets every now and then.
Yeah, I believe it. She's very busy, so I don't know how often she gets out. This is actually one of my favorite games to play. Who top three? Who would you like to wait on?
Wow.
Or like, you know, who, someone comes up into the bar, like who would you want to come in? Mine is always like Bill Murray's always up there.
Yeah, I understand. Bill Murray used to be a pretty regular guest on our show.
Yeah, yeah, he's kind of fallen off a little bit. We'll hit him up.
We'll invite him back again.
Yeah,
Bill Murray.
I wasn't prepared. This is for the group as much as it is.
Fine.
I have nerdy wine related ones. So.
Well, yeah,
So, like, I really this amazing English wine writer named Hugh Johnson.
Okay.
Which the staff always giggles about when I mention his name, but he is kind of like a Cambridge Oxford Don type that wrote one of the kind of preeminent reference works on wine called the Wine Atlas.
Okay.
As well as a number of other books, but I'd get really soaked if he came into
this. Who was the Rubicon guy? What's his?
Larry Stone.
Stone, yeah.
Yeah, he's amazing. Yeah, he has been in.
Yeah.
He's an OG, too. One of my favorite stories about Larry Stone, he threw Madonna out of his restaurant when he was managing like the Four Seasons in Seattle. And this is back, this is not like British accent Madonna. This is like the height of
that was my favorite Madonna.
Material girl,
pointy boobies Madonna.
Yeah, this is like real Madonna. Madonna, not like the, you know, whatever passes for Madonna these days. You know, that's the Madonna I want. You know,
but Larry Stone also. I mean, Larry Stone played mentor to Jen Knowles, who was our guest.
Oh, great! Yeah,
he's a total badass, and actually he gets credit. You know, a lot of credit for mentoring. Women in the business in a really amazing way. Yeah. But he's just like a lovely, unassuming, old school service personality. And he's not a natural wine guy. He's not like, you know, hip or whatever. He makes matter-of-factly delicious, wildly elegant wines. And his estate is fully biodynamic if you care about the chip. But like, you know, there's nothing, you know, kind of hip. Right. About the man, but like he is for me, he like embodies this, you know, like lovably old fashioned ethic, kind of Somme ethic,
yeah,
that, you know, transcends, you know, the, you know, half life of, you know, what is cool, you know, at a particular place and time, and you know, speaks to this kind of deeper and more abiding sense of hospitality that you know is timeless.
Well, let's talk about your philosophy. I mean, you often shirk from the word Somme, but your program is, you know, nationally recognized. Your wine list revolves around bodies of water and, you know, runs deep with literary references. Has this always been your kind of where you wanted to go with wine?
Well, can you first take a moment and describe your wine program?
Oh, okay.
And
how it's organized. For those who are uninitiated or have been into the restaurant and, you know, still
confused.
Wrap their head around it.
Yeah, yeah. It happens quite often.
Which is like most everybody, and including, you know, some of the staff. although you guys do your best, and you know, a lot of the, you know, criteria are sufficiently arbitrary.
Bill, how often do you test your staff?
Regularly, yes. You know, Matthew can personally attest to that.
Matthew is constantly studying.
Very regularly.
No, he's very good.
This is on air, guys.
I know.
Live. It cannot be taken back.
If you wanted to test him right now, I wouldn't.
Oh, God, no.
No, we were constantly testing people, and honestly, that is about, you know, wanting to make service, you know, something that is not only, you know, a kind of a punch in and punch out kind of proposition. It's about, you know, making it something that you can continue to grow into. And I think in terms of professional development on the service side, you know, a lot of that is going to be, you know, wine driven. And that's a skill set ultimately that you can take with you if you go to another job. And also, you know, it speaks to this just kind of larger philosophy. If you're going to do something, you might as well do it well. And, you know, the value that we can add on the service side has everything to do with, you know, arming people if they're interested with more information about what they're drinking and making it, you know, kind of more fun for them. And that's something we feel passionately about. And on the, I would say, you know, just kind of take a step back and speak more broadly to the organization of the list. I often lament that a lot of wine lists don't feel grounded. You know, it's just like a kind of hodgepodge collection of, you know, things that are cool or things that you like or whatever, and it doesn't feel like there's kind of a unifying theme. So the list at the Tail Up Goat, our restaurant revolves around these bodies of water. So it's wines that are from the Eastern Seaboard, wines that are from Mediterranean islands, and then wines that are from famous continental river valleys. And if you're still listening, you know, the idea there is that, you know, you're giving things focus. You know, those wines can and sometimes do share a particular flavor profile in a compelling way that makes them fond to position with each other against each other and makes them good with our food. And then I'm fond of saying that, you know, sometimes the most interesting, you know, set of choices, sometimes the most interesting results happen when you're solving a problem of your own making. So I like this idea that, you know, kind of enforcing creativity on yourself. So there are a lot of wines that I love that we don't serve. You know, we don't serve a lot of mainland Italian stuff.
And that's where your monthly, or is it bi-monthly, kind of themes come
from? Well, yeah. So and those are bounded by, you know, these kind of arbitrary, you know, kind of geographical criteria that would come up. But yeah, so we also have themes. At the moment, we're rocking a bunch of Portuguese reds. A lot of which has to do with my own wanderlust, you know, honestly, you know, just keep life interesting, you know, it helps to turn over the list some, but I think, you know, and Hampton Water has proved positive that people drink seasonally. Yeah. And you know, want to make sure that the wine list is sufficiently dynamic and reflects that, you know, just like, you know, the bill of fare would. So, yeah, it gives us a chance to take on things as a staff and learn wines. It kind of forces us to seek out stuff that we might not otherwise seek out. And, you know, hopefully for the people that come on a regular basis, it makes it fun to dive into a list and then to come back and to, you know, dive deeper.
Well, I've found that's a good conversation start too. I mean, last night I had a couple in that, you know, they go to Portugal once a year and they're like, oh, Portuguese wines, like, you don't often see these because, you know, from our experience, unless you've actually been to Portugal, you're not experiencing the best of Portugal wines. And it starts as this kind of a conversation starter where people can either begin their journey or can continue that journey.
Yeah, totally. And I think the Portuguese thing feels very like on fleek because everybody and your mom is going to Portugal these days.
It's the new Iceland.
yeah.
I thought Tulum was the new Iceland.
The Icelandic
no, Iceland was the new Tulum.
The Icelandic wine scene leaves something to be desired. So you know, we were gonna do Iceland, but then it got forced into Portugal. Not really.
Okay,
but you know, yeah.
I was just thinking about all the unique consonants that I'd have to learn for my next test.
Yes, exactly. So yeah, this is Sven, our Icelandic wine varietal pronunciation guide.
But it's no secret that you know you like these underdog wines that kind of break the mold, but also showcase craftsmanship.
Yeah, I would hope so. I definitely have hipsterish contrarian tendencies in terms of the stuff that we feature. But, you know, I also am kind of like looking to, you know, fill a gap in the sense that I think a lot of people when they look for wines or they drink wines are just kind of responding to trends. So whatever the trend may be, you know, the trend, you know, a decade ago was for, you know, big ass red wines or huge ass, whatever.
Huge ass beer wines.
Yeah, exactly. Whatever was appropriately trademarked. Yeah. You know, red wines. And DC is kind of slow to grasp that that's no longer the trend because, you know, people still wear boxy Brooks Brothers suits here. Yeah. But, you know, suddenly, you know, we're coming into, you know, the tailored suit, the natural wine kind of, you know.
Yeah, that's a good way to put
world.
It.
And I think that's awesome. Like, I love a lot of those wines, but I think people, they also miss a lot of, like, what's in between. And you know, I'm in a unique position as someone that, you know, drinks professionally to say, you know, look, this is not, like, a sexy natural wine. This is not a big red wine, but, like, this is, like, an elegant, awesome, off-the-beaten-path thing that you should be drinking and devoting more attention to. So, you know, ultimately, that's kind of where I want to live. Like, this, yeah. You know, awesome kind of, you know, oh, dear God, I didn't even know this was out there kind of, you know, discovery and moment. And, you know, for me, when I go out, those are the most interesting dining experiences. Those are the most interesting beverage experiences.
I mean, can we draw a delineation between what is a hipstery wine versus and then how that becomes a trend versus like what can actually just go out there and the general public can enjoy. Because I hear it's like, okay, natural wines, oh, it's very hipster, yeah, blah, blah, blah. And I've caught myself describing that sometimes.
Yeah, hipsters are weird. I mean, hipster's a loaded word. Natural wine, or natural, you know, in the context of wine, is a hugely loaded word. You know, I lament that, you know, they both leave a lot of people on the outside. So I think there's a sense in which...
I mean, at a certain point, like really huge IPAs used to be really hipster.
Oh, totally.
And now they're in the mainstream.
Yeah, or now they're you know, there's a reactionary move against them, and like, you know, sours are like the hotness. So you know, I think, you know, I try to think, you know, outside of those trends in as much as possible, but you know, obviously I'm, you know, subject to them as someone inside the industry. You know, I lament that the natural wine scene can end up like a kind of cool kids in the room kind of club.
Right.
You know, where you feel like, fuck, you know, I don't have enough tattoos. You know, I don't have, you know, a properly styled mustache. You know, I can't.
Okay.
No, honestly
it's all true. These comments are very...
You know, I don't belong drinking this. You know, sometimes I feel that way, like as an untattooed, you know, unmustached, you know, person serving this shit, but...
There's a picture floating around of a wine bar in Oakland or San Francisco that is supposed to represent the epitome of hipster winedom.
Yeah.
And it's floating around now, and a friend of mine is in it. And,
oh, yeah.
And it's disturbing that like this certain singular group of people can now represent a certain demographic.
Yeah, and I think it starts to, you know, reach this critical mass where people start to react against it, you know, whether or not they should. I lament the fact that, you know, sometimes it leaves people on the outside not feeling like, you know, they're cool enough to drink this shit, or, you know, God forbid they don't like it in the first place, you know, you know, they just like genuinely don't want their wine to taste like, you know, olive brine or, you know, crushed rocks or whatever, you know, but you know, there's nothing, you know, morally wrong about that. You know, there are a lot of ways to make good wine and do it, you know, in a responsible manner, like environmentally and socially. And there are a lot of like really elegant, awesome wines that don't taste like feet. You know, there are a lot of elegant, awesome wines that are matter-of-factly delicious, you know?
Well,
And I kind of like am polyamorous about the whole thing, and I like the shit that's matter-of-factly delicious. I like the stuff that tastes like feet. And you know, I my favorite lists are the ones where, you know, that stuff kind of exists side by side. And it's like this like really thoughtful, you know, gallery show where, you know, you have maybe a painting from one era, you know, that you know, responds to this painting on another wall that, you know, relates to it, you know, in some way or another. But, you know, they're from wildly different epochs, and they still, you know, function and make sense and, you know, belong under this larger umbrella.
Bill, now, if I'm hearing you correctly, I have a mustache guy for you.
it would end up really creepy. It would be one of those situations where, like, people would kind of like screw up their face and say like, are you trying to grow a mustache?
Well, you're very blonde.
Yeah. No, but it'd be like, are you trying to grow a mustache? Or it would look like an eighth grader like trying to grow a mustache for the first time, and people would say like, isn't it cute, he's trying to grow a mustache, that kind of thing.
You should know eighth graders are our biggest listening demo.
Yeah, nice. Well, there you go. So shout out to all you kids trying to grow mustaches out there.
We're gonna step out for a quick second here, and when we come back, we're gonna dive a little bit deeper about the new spot.
New spot.
You're listening to Shift Drink. I'm Matthew Ramsey. We're here with Eddie Kim and Bill Jensen. We'll be right back. You're listening to Shift Drink. Matthew Ramsey, Eddie Kim, joined with Bill Jensen as our guest this week from Tale of Goat. My boss. All my questions have been very... Yeah.
Let's talk about your...
accordingly tame and or lame.
Soft. We'll just call them soft. you guys are opening up a new restaurant, the Revelers Hour, new bar, wine bar, restaurant.
Let's talk
about that for a second.
Thank you for lobbing that one my way, Matthew.
Here's a hardball for you.
Speaking of softballs.
You guys are doing something new. Share. So we are thrilled to be expanding our restaurant empire and still going to be located around the street. Or around the way from this studio.
Literally right across the street, right?
Yeah, literally right across the street. Around the block from our current restaurant, Tale of Goat. And it's going to be called Revelers Hour, which is a nod to a Greek drinking ode. Sculptor, wouldst thou glad my soul, grave for me an ample bowl, fit to shine in hall or bower, when springtime brings the Revelers Hour.
I've got your first tattoo idea right now.
Do you have that memorized for all your guests that ask about it?
Not a requirement for employment by any means. We envision a larger list, kind of consistent with the wine bar, but wants to stay away from that when it comes to the place itself, because we will certainly offer more than your average yuppie chow. So it's not just like meat and cheese and wine. We're going to have a full menu. And John, the incredibly talented James Beard-nominated chef de cuisine, is going to create some awesome pastas and kind of double down on his pasta making for this particular entity. So
awesome.
It will be a place where you can get your drink on, but equally get your grub on. It will be myself, John, and Jill Tyler, who really keeps the whole show running, that are collaborating on this second venture. And
so this is an anti-wine wine bar.
Sure. Yeah, I don't know.
Anti-wine bar.
Yeah, however you want to frame it. But, I like the idea that it's a place that you could just kind of wander into for a drink, or you could just, decide on a drink, or maybe meet someone there for the first time and say, oh shit, this is going well. I might double down on a pasta.
A right swipe.
Yeah, so, exactly.
So if anyone's listening from not DC, sometimes you hear Adams Morgan and you think like it's a party neighborhood.
It is a party neighborhood.
Yeah. Why are you doubling down in this neighborhood?
Also, Eddie and I were talking about this before. Tale of Goat is in an apartment building.
It's like, why?
It's not on any main street. There's not a lot of foot traffic. It's hidden behind stuff, behind a Phil's Coffee. The cell phone service is horrible.
Those are
Eddie words, not
those
mine.
We have an irrational hatred of AT&T subscribers,
yes.
For whatever reason. So you guys can, kiss that endorsement deal goodbye. At any rate, we wanted to be kind of a neighborhood joint. We live here. John and Jill literally live, down the street, like a stone's throw, a proverbial stone's throw away from Tale of Goat. I live comparatively far, but like a 15-minute walk in Columbia Heights. And we love Adams Morgan. My wife and I lived here for the better part of a decade before we bought our house. John and Jill still live here, obviously. And Adams Morgan is this like awesome lived-in, historic, wonderfully eclectic, urban enclave in the way that DC doesn't have a lot of. And it's a neighborhood with memory. It is, really diverse, almost poetically so. The name of the neighborhood itself, for those that don't know, actually comes from the union of the formerly segregated elementary schools, Adams and Morgan, that were desegregated after Brown v. Board. I like that it feels like a place with memory, and it feels like, place where you can grow and evolve.
An actual community.
Yeah, exactly. And yes, there are, undergrads or undergrads that come here and get their drink on and get sloppy on the weekends. But, there are also, grown-ass people that, live and work and, go out here as well. And You know, as we grew up, we kind of wanted the neighborhood to grow up with us a little bit, and we're really thrilled to be a part of that. And I think, you know, secondarily, you know, we like the idea of these kind of like hidden urban oases. So I think,
sure,
you know, some of my favorite spots are these restaurants, like you turn a corner, especially in like bigger cities. I mean, DC doesn't have a ton of this, but like in New York, you like turn a corner, it's like, oh shit, there's this like really awesome, you know.
Where in New York?
Yeah.
I mean, I think about Prune, you know, I think, yeah. Yeah, you know, oh, that's a place where it's like, you know, this like humble little facade.
I was just thinking, I would love to serve Gabrielle Hamilton.
Yeah, yeah. You know, you just like turn a corner and like, you know, mm-hmm. you wander this awesome place and, you know, suddenly you're getting like a world-class meal and they're serving you dessert wine and like vintage nudie glasses. Like, what's not amazing to like about that?
That's amazing, yeah.
You know, and also I think, you know, for us, in terms of what we wanted out of a restaurant, you know, we wanted that kind of space. You know, we wanted the kind of space that, you know, felt lived in and ultimately, you know, existed beyond this, you know, crazy, you know, what's hot, what's not kind of restaurant cycle, and was just a place where, you know, people wanted to come and come back to and became a part of a fabric of a place and, you know, created a sense of community in a really substantial way.
I mean, now that you are James Beard nominated and Adams Morgan is a very hot neighborhood, so for all intents and purposes, you've grown past like being a neighborhood spot almost.
Yeah, I mean, like, I will say to my wife that, you know, we wanted to be a, you know, Humber neighborhood joint. She's like, bullshit, you know. So she puts a lot of that, and obviously, you know, we are ambitious enough that, you know, we were aiming for more. But I think and that is very true, and I will, you know, admit to all that. But, you know, I think in terms of the soul of the place, in terms of the bones of it, you know, the meat of it, in terms of, you know, how people use it, you know, that's where you want to live. And I get really excited when people come into the restaurant and, you know, it's their place and they're bringing in their parents. So that, for me, that's like always the highest praise is, right, like you're showing us off to, right, you know,
it's the ultimate bring your parents, especially if they're paying.
I like to think
I'm definitely guilty of that.
Yeah. It's not prohibitively expensive, but yeah, it's not cheap either. I'm not going to pretend it's.
Oh no, so. No, not at all. But yeah, like, yeah, it's yeah. a nice place, and everyone's going to have a good time. The parents will gladly shell over their platinum card, and yeah.
But just to bring it full circle, we're stoked to open a second spot that is maybe a little, you know, a little more raucous. Maybe you could bring your folks, but you know. You know, maybe you don't have to, you know, maybe you can, you know, do a little, you know, swiping there left and right or whatever the kids these days do.
We are Tinder approved.
Are you afraid they might turn, like, this happens a lot, but a waiting room for Tail of Goat?
I mean, I...
Because it's just around the corner.
No, honestly, like, it'd be cool if we had that problem. I think in terms of, I mean, obviously, you know, you want to make sure that your places have, you know, a different life and, you know, that they feel, you know, different enough to coexist, especially in a very small place. I think in terms of like, you know, the Joe Beef Empire, in Montreal, you know, they have, you know, a few restaurants right next to each other and, you know, they have the flagship and then they have, you know, like a more casual joint and they have a wine bar and they all are, you know,
they all work really well together.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, but like Joan Beef, like kind of like is that neighborhood to some extent. Like they're not the only people there, but like they're bound up in it in a really kind of poetic way. And I think that's something that we would aspire to here.
I mean, you're a very creative soul. There's a lot of poetry that's involved in the work you do. Well, you and Jill and John have three very different personalities.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, not. We all, but I mean, it's like a marriage. It's like a weird, it's like a weird thruple situation. But I just learned that way the word the other day from one of our employees. Thruple. Yeah. I didn't even know that was a thing. But it is very much a business marriage. And
can you talk to how that marriage kind of came to be?
So we all work together. You know, I think John and Jill were always clear that opening a spot was something that they wanted to do, and then I found out that, you know, they were looking to do it and came in on it. I don't think I was always as clear myself that, that was my, you know, kind of restaurant destiny. But, you know, I think, you know, the restaurant world has been this amazing, you know, place for me. And, I figured, like, it's not where I imagined myself. You know, I didn't go to, you know, show and tell in first grade and say, like, I want to pour wine for a living. It's kind of a...
What did you say?
I don't know. I think maybe not first grade, but I wanted to save the world, you know, and now I'm, you know, destroying livers, so go figure. But
you're creating memories.
Yes. Exactly. And actually, you know,
for all of
we name dropped Gabrielle Hamilton the other day, and I was lucky enough to be at the Beard Awards when she won for like best restaurant New York, some shit like that. And you know, she said that she had this really awesome speech. She said, you know, we make people happy. We don't contribute to human misery. And you know, there is something, you know, intensely noble about that. And there is something, you know. You know, hugely noble about the service profession that often gets overlooked by the people that aren't in it. Because I mean, we eat a lot of shit too. Yeah.
For our city in particular, and sometimes I think about this when I really don't want to go to work. But we have a lot of nonprofit workers here and who work for NGOs, and they work really, really hard, and it feels nice to provide a place and give them a good experience where they can revive. I mean, that's the definition of restaurant. Well, it's a place to rest.
And honestly, like even in the context of government, like, I mean, this has been eroded quite a bit in, you know, the midst of the, you know, historical douchebaggery that, you know, going down at 1600 Pennsylvania at the moment. But like, you know, there was always a sense in which the service class here was here to serve everybody.
Yeah.
And, you know, and this, you know, sense in which, you know, restaurants were a place where everybody could come together, and there's incredible value in that.
Yeah, I agree. Well, let's leave it there for now.
we need to talk about something more controversial.
Oh my goodness!
I think that's a good place to park it. But we have one more game that we want to get done before we run out of time here.
We are going to go jump into rapid fire.
Time for the payback.
Rapid fire.
All right, so these are just, you know, first thing that comes to mind, Bill. We're going to ask some serious questions.
Cheetos.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm going to start calling this my equal parts question. So, again, referencing Laura Hayes, who tweeted this a while back. Equal parts restaurant. What if you were to open a place that served one dish, one drink, one band?
Whoa.
What would it be?
Whoa.
Dish would be just like a kick-ass roast chicken, like the Zuni roast chicken. One drink, would be Riesling. And then one band,
yes,
it'd be Dylan.
Band or art? I would say artwork or just a general thing.
It'd
but
be Dylan.
Dylan.
Yeah,
it could be like one Dylan song because they're all just like 20 minutes long.
No, they're not all. But like for me, that's what's amazing about Dylan, though. Dylan gives you everything. You know, there's a lot of Dylan out there.
What is your cocktail guilty pleasure?
Guilty pleasure or like? Guilty pleasure is
like you wouldn't order it at work because you don't want anybody to know.
I just like tiki drinks, really like. But like the goofy ones, like but like well made. I mean, like the shit that Owen does, at Archipelago. You know, that is, yeah. I like those.
I love Archipelago.
Although I will say, when I first started drinking, like underage, I would always order like, and I visited this really good friend who's at Columbia in New York, and we just end up at whatever bar would serve us. Which ended up being like really weird. So like we'd wander into it.
To be fair, you still look very young.
Yeah. But I looked even younger.
I can only imagine.
It was criminal. Yeah, we were wandering in. We were like wandering into like old school gay bars. Not like gay bars now, but like gay bars with no sign.
West Village.
Yeah, exactly. And just, you know, they would serve us. So, you know, fill it up. And I always got a Long Island iced tea because it felt like, you know, you could get the most bang for your buck that way. You're getting like however many different spirits.
Economical.
It'll get you drunk. Yeah. So that was... That was, and actually, I had one made recently, like a good Long Island. It was actually kind of delicious.
Yeah,
like well made. It was.
I had one, I guess, most recently about a year ago, and it was amazing.
I had a blue motorcycle recently, which is basically a Long Island iced tea with blue curacao.
Okay.
Yeah.
And that was?
Ellie?
No. How was it?
They make a great one.
Oh, there you go. Yeah, see? There you go. So
awesome. Bill, what was your first concert?
This is a great answer. So it was a Tibetan Freedom Concert.
What?
Oh, my God. Matthew's heart is just...
Both days. Amazing, Matthew's life-altering experience. Yes. For those of you who don't know, this was a Beastie Boys-sponsored festival at the old RFK. I guess RFK's still kicking it. But Sonic Youth, the Beastie Boys, like Radiohead.
I had
Red Hot Chili Peppers, like everybody and their mom. Although the first day somebody got hit by lightning, so they had to cut that one short. But the second day was like the most amazing day of music. It was awesome.
Matthew is really great at puns. I was waiting for you to say something, but
I got nothing.
No. Okay. You're on a road trip and you had to choose between Taco Bell or KFC, the combo restaurant. Choose one.
Okay. That's fair. I think I would do the Taco Bell.
Oh, yes. Thank you.
Yeah.
Favorite Brad Pitt movie?
Oh, wow. This is actually... I don't know, man. I'd say Fight Club, but that seems like such a bro-y answer. I actually really love River Runs Through It, too.
Oh, randomly. Yes.
Yeah.
Nice.
Nice.
I respect that answer. Nice.
Zodiac sign that you hate?
I don't really hate any. I feel very strongly about my own. I'm a Scorpio, and I like to say that's the most rapped about
it is.
Zodiac sign.
Only Scorpio would say that.
Going away. But I don't think about the other Zodiac signs. That's how strongly I feel about my own.
All right. So... I have a story. Like I don't know if this is gonna resonate with you. Like the very first wine bottle I opened up for a friend. It's my very first service job in New York.
I remember the first bottle I opened too.
Do you? Okay.
I was a Molchieri Aglianico. It was
God, I can't.
I was working at 2 Amy's at the time, and actually a lot of people. It's fascinating. A lot of people have this like road to Damascus conversion experience with like the first wine they tried that made them think about and. 2 Amy's is this amazing restaurant with this hugely gifted chef and winemaker as well, Peter Passan. I can remember the first time I tasted wine with him because he has the most epic spit in the world, like a camel. Like he can hit a spittoon from across the damn room. But he's also this like hugely cerebral, awesome. He looks like the dude from The Big Lebowski, but he doesn't say a lot. But when he does speak, you know, it behooves you to listen. At any rate, but it was this. Quirky Southern Italian red. So I don't have a first, you know, what wine made you want to do this for a living, but I can remember opening that bottle and thinking, oh, shit, this is a pretty cool thing to get paid to do.
Right on.
Well, I was going to say, they made me think about my first wine. I don't remember the first wine that I opened. I can't believe you guys remember that. That's crazy to me.
Well, mine ended with me basically breaking the tip of the bottle off my hand. Blood shooting everywhere. And
I can.
Nice.
Yeah. It was not my aha moment.
You should have kept that bottle. Jacket edges and everything. Upstate New York at a steakhouse. It was a Cote de Bowen. And for some reason, they asked. Yeah. And I chose the wine off the list. And being a 22-year-old, I just graduated. Did not have a lot of money, but it was still a good value. And... that's what looked like. It was a little bit of a light bulb. A little bit.
Yeah.
It was like a nightlight.
Yeah, for me, I feel like it's easier to create those moments in retrospect than it is, to have them, in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, for me, it was like, oh, shit, fuck. I think I made a right decision. I was very surprised with myself.
This is like a wild tangent, but I had that moment, too, about restaurants. I was in... I was, young and stupid and in college and visiting a friend who's studying abroad in Barcelona. And I went to this amazing, epic Barcelona kind of institution called Cal Pep and sat at the end of the bar. My credit card got declined because I had, like, exhausted any money that I had. And so I had, like...
Because fish, college.
Yeah. And I fished through my pocket for enough euros to cobble together to throw at them to cover the meal. But I can remember sitting there. I was by myself. Got a bottle of wine for myself, which I couldn't finish. So I gave the rest to the staff. But the staff was coming in to, like, squabble over off days and stuff like that. But they were, like, really collegial and awesome. And the chef, Pep, like came over and showed me. They had like, this is before like Spanish food became like hugely ubiquitous stateside, and stuff like gambas a la parrilla were kind of like exotic. Right. But he showed me how to eat these amazing huge prawns with my hands, and like they did like all these like riffs on things that are now kind of like totally passé, but at the time were revelatory, like pimientos de parrón, these like blistered shishito-ish peppers. And you know, I can remember thinking like, you know, again, like, shit, like this doesn't suck.
How awesome is this? Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, we have one last question before we
wrap this up.
This is Mary Fuck Kill.
Fuck Mary Kill.
Now, Bill, I'm going to read descriptions of three different wines
as dramatically as possible.
Nah, just regularly.
No.
You're going to have to tell me which of these wines, based on the description alone, you would fuck, marry, kill.
Oh, this is good. Where did you get the descriptions?
Now, I will say that each of these wines belongs to a celebrity.
Ooh, so nice.
I'll reveal the celebrity after you've told me which...
I think they got them off of their website, so...
Yeah, yeah, these are all...
Are we currently drinking one of them?
No, we're not. No, okay. All right. But we're using it as a jumping board.
Understood.
All right, so first up. This Syrah, Cabernet Sauvignon, Petit Verdot, and Grenache blend
kill
is distinctive and appealing for the savory personality, offering notes of smoky plum, grilled anise, cracked pepper that take an oomph, and tannins on the finish.
Did they say grilled anise?
Yeah.
Wow. Fascinating. Oh, great.
All right, so that's number one.
Are they talking about grilled fennel?
I don't know. Let's just go with it. We're going with it.
All right, number one. This is number two. These were the first rows and the first vines I learned to care for by hand.
Mary.
It was also the first grape I fell in love with on our first harvest in 2014. This Petit Verdot was harvested on a full moon.
And also kill.
Also happened to be my birthday that year. We called it the Magical Birthday Brew.
Wow.
All right. And number three. This Chardonnay has characteristics of pears.
Kill.
Light French oak. White chocolate with dollops of vanilla, the perfect wine to make any day a special occasion.
Wow, I'm hugely curious to hear the celebrity personalities behind each of these offerings.
Yes. So out of these three, you have to marry one.
That's hard.
So in review, you have a petit Verdot.
Yeah.
Syrah, Cab, Petit Verdot, Grenache blend.
I'm gonna have to kill the Chard, because there's nothing more obnoxious in this world than buttery vanilla driven Chard.
Oh, that breaks
me. You killed.
Wait. Let's wait.
Okay. Yeah.
I'm gonna fuck the first one because it feels kind of slutty for some reason.
Oh, nice. Okay. You're not gonna regret this at all.
And I'm gonna marry the second one, the first vines harvested, because you know, it sounds poetic.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Who am I? Yeah.
All right. So you're fucking Fergalicious 2014.
Nice.
Fergie's.
I feel like I'm one for one here.
You are marrying Pink's new Two Wolves Petit Verdot. And you are killing Gabrielle Union's vanilla pudding.
Oh, I love Gabrielle Union. You know, her husband has some wine too.
Yeah, he's a producer.
Yeah.
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 So nicely done.
Wow.
Well, Boss and Bill Jensen, thank you for joining us this week.
Thank you so much for having me, gentlemen.
You can revisit this week's episode or previous episodes on iTunes or wherever you grab your podcasts, including Spotify. Find us on all social medias at ShiftDrinkDC. Please leave any comments. We want to hear from you. Any kind of ideas for new segments.
Speaking of which, Bill, we have a thing that we ask and we rarely follow up on, but do you have a ask it forward question for next week? We don't know who the guest is. But you get to ask one question that we'll ask them.
Oh yeah. Well, I think the question we touched on earlier, the top three.
Oh yeah.
People living. Oh. Let's keep it living.
Good one.
That you would like to serve.
Awesome.
Max's question was, and you can answer this very quickly.
Yeah,
what's your favorite month of the year?
That is an excellent question, and it is September.
You're such a Scorpio. Wait, that's September, right?
No, it's November, dude.
Okay, sweet.
Yeah, yeah.
A special thank you to Jeffrey Lemereau for our new, brand new intro music. very spacey, and DJ RecTech for other sound effects.
Until next week, guys, thanks for listening.
Thank you. Thank you, Bill.
Thank you, Gemma.
Thanks, Alexia.